Alright, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are well. We are back again with another episode in quick succession. Today is an interview I did with Paul Bardsley from Molly Halfhead and Wireless and Fantasy Chicken and the Amateurs. If that name doesn't mean anything to you, well, it will do in about 40 minutes. Really, really enjoyed talking to Paul. Fascinating stories of growing up with Noel, being in a band together, and and then his experiences generally in the industry. So that was all good. Before we get onto that, there's been a couple of things happening in the world of Oasis. Obviously, Liam has been carrying on playing and doing his big gigs. As I record this, he's playing at Hampden, so I hope everyone that went to that had a great time. If anyone would like to drop me an audio review of the recent Liam or Noel shows, then do feel free. There was no major change in the set, as far as I'm aware, other than he bought back Soul Love. So here is Soul Love from Rock in Rio, but it's actually in Lisbon.
What do you mean, can you play with me? What do you mean? I mean, enough trouble as it is. What do you mean? A wanking competition. Oh, the guitar. This one's called Soul Love.
And stop the press. I'm picking this up a day later. It's now Monday night. I asked for some recordings from Hampden, and one's come in from our good friend Andy Rogers. So let's hear what Andy has to say.
Hi, James. This is my review of Liam Gallagher at Hampden Park, Glasgow, last night. Sorry for the voice, it's a bit smashed. Alcohol and singing away last night has done me, but yeah, got into the stadium, sort of got to know my whereabouts down onto the pitch, and to my utter shock, as a joke, the beer queues are a bit mental on the floor. Thought, right, you just go in, I'll get four beers, I can spend about 25-30 minutes in the beer queue while Kasabian were on. Got that sorted, made my way around to the pitch because a couple of friends of mine had set a meeting point, and end up finding them, seeing them, the Kasabian, who were absolutely brilliant. Doesn't look like he's missing Tom. I think he suits singing the songs his way. Obviously, he's got his own sort of way as a front man. Starting with club foot, ending with fire. And yeah, that sort of kicks it off. It's like a rebirth of 2009 when I seen Oasis being supported by Kasabian and Murrayfield Stadium. So nice little bit of nostalgia with that. And then Liam comes on, fucking in the bushes. Parker looks brilliant on him. I think it might have been the same one he wore at the Etihad. And yeah, kicks off with Hello, Into Rock and Roll Star, Wall of Glass. Sorry, Morning Glory, Wall of Glass, Everything's Electric, Drop Shockwave, and Why Me, Why Not, from the, sort of the early part of the set. he's included Soul Love, which I thought was brilliant. I think sounds better now than it ever did with BDI Live. And yeah, got through, Roll It Over was very, very good. I've got a really good video of a part of that, and the Slide Away, which for me it's the best song and my favourite song personally. And yeah, get through the set list, get to Diamonds in the Dark, Worlds in Need, which I think the new stuff live, it's even better than it is on the album. More Power is, that had me sort of lost for words how good it was. But yeah, Liam was in top form. Voice was absolutely brilliant. Maybe the best I've heard it since he came back. I don't know what anyone else thinks. But the Hampden Glasgow crowd just, you know, I've got this reputation of being great crowds, and I thought the crowd was amazing. Got to, you know, the river once. Did they play the river? Oh God, I can't remember. Get to once and the fireworks goes off for his encore. I'd left being at sort of the front of the pitch, bit where I was. Come back and I was sort of at the back for the encore. Comes on, some might say sounded brilliant. Into like Wonderwall, Cigarettes and Alcohol, and something else, and finished off with Champagne Supernova. Really good gig.
Cheers, Andy. Really pleased you enjoyed it. If you don't know, Andy did the Alan McGee impression for my little sketch thing that we put out a little while ago, and it's on the CD. And just to say, I still need to post out a load of CDs. I'm really sorry. I've been very busy, but I will get to that very, very soon. Okay, let's get back to me from yesterday. And also, Noel has been doing his shows. He did his warm-ups in the forests, and then he's also done Glastonbury. So this was Saturday night. He was on just before Paul McCartney, and I watched it live on TV, and I really, really enjoyed it. I've been quite critical of Noel's set lists as being, you know, basically the same as it's been for the last sort of 4 or 5 years. And, you know, I was sort of really hoping this time around he might mix it up and bring in either some different songs he's not played from the solo stuff, or even some Oasis stuff he's never played before. I hope that we might get something different, which didn't happen. He very much stuck to the sort of similar set that he's been playing for the last few years. Compared to the headline shows he's been doing, obviously he didn't quite have as long. He only had just over an hour, and so he had to pull out a couple of songs. So he dropped like Rattling Rose and a couple of others. So it ended up being is a funny sort of set, and Noel kind of drew attention to this on the stage, that he sort of said, "All right, I'm going to play you a load of stuff you don't want to hear, and then after that, then we'll get to the good stuff." Which is, it's just a funny way to do it. I mean, if you're going to draw attention to it, then like, I don't know, why do it but then draw attention to it? Like, for instance, Jarvis played on the Sunday afternoon, and he only played one Pulp song, and that's fine. He just didn't make a big deal out of it. He just got on with it. Whereas it's funny that Noel kind of draws attention to it. But anyway, so he effectively split it in half, 7 Noel Gallagher's Highflying Birds, 7 Oasis, and it was pretty much all Who Built the Moon or the EPs, except he did drop in AK What a Life kind of in with the Oasis songs, and I thought it was interesting because it did kind of fit in very nicely. So let's have a bit of that.
Keeping my head down now for the summer. I'm out of my mind, man, call me a night.
So yeah, I genuinely really enjoyed it. I thought it flew along really well. I thought it sort of, you know, the band were on great form. I think Noel was on good form, although he did screw up a couple of lyrics. I think I spotted in The Importance of Being Idle and Dead in the Water. I think he might have buggered up a little bit, but it didn't really matter. And yeah, I saw some people were critical on Twitter, sort of saying his voice wasn't great or whatever. He didn't sing Stop Crying Your Heart Out well, I think I saw. I thought he was absolutely fine. I thought he did really well. So yeah, so very pleased to have seen Noel. Although I didn't get to see him in person, like I mentioned last week, I'm recovering from COVID, so I wasn't able to go and see him in Bristol like I planned to. But yeah, so all in all, nice, good to see him on the big stage. And then, yeah, and then obviously Paul McCartney last night was absolutely amazing. I did wonder whether Noel would get on stage with Paul. And he got Dave Grohl and he got Bruce Springsteen on, but no sign of Noel. Apparently, Noel had said in an interview he wasn't going to watch McCartney. He was going to go and watch Jamie T, which would have been a strange choice. But I don't know. We'll have to see if he ends up talking to Matt Morgan to see whether or not that was the case. But yeah, it would have been lovely to see him on stage. But anyway, there you go. Right, that is all in the world of Oasis. Let's move on now to my interview with Paul Bardsley.
Okay.
There we go. So welcome to the Oasis podcast. Paul Bardsley, how you doing, man?
Yeah, good, yeah. Not so bad, cheers.
I like the Man United mug. How are you feeling about Ten Hag?
Optimistic, to be fair. I mean, they've just been terrible anyway, so I've got like family who've got season tickets, so I do my best to try and get out of going.
Yeah.
Excuse and that, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, hopefully. I hope he'll. Although, you know, I'm from South Oxfordshire, so obviously, and I was, you know, grew up in the 90s, so obviously I'm a Manchester United fan.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, but yeah, it's funny because you grew up in Burnage, right? Not too far the Gallaghers. It's a funny old area, isn't it? Because you get the fact it's not. You know, most cities, it's like a certain area will be one team, and a certain area will be another team. But it feels like very much a mixture.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, when I think back, a lot of like my friends were City fans. Do you know what I mean? You kind of like when you're a kid, you don't really analyze it.
Yeah.
Too much, but you know, in hindsight. Yeah, but it was a quite a funny area anyway. Really, there's a lot of lads around there. You just seem to be more lads. Do you know what I mean?
Just lads, no women, no
just
girls.
Lads, probably about two. No, seriously, it's like it was bizarre.
Yeah, but so you were, you grew up. Yeah, I mean, you're literally a couple of streets away, aren't you, from the Gallagher place?
Yeah, just we're like sort of. So I knew Noel and Liam, you know, pretty well. So Liam had kind of. I don't know, I remember going on bus rides with him because it was almost like going abroad, you know, to Eccles from Burnage. You'd be on the bus for about an hour. Yeah. So although there's like an age difference, I remember stuff like that. And one thing that always sticks in my mind was a mate of mine, Liam, was with us and he had sister and her friend was round. Just saying to Liam, you're going to break some hearts when you're older.
Really?
And yeah, just kind of, you know, doe-eyed, just always kind of stuck with me.
Yeah, you saw he was like a handsome kid. He had something about him.
Yeah.
I know. I know Mary McGuigan quite a bit, Gwigsy's sister. And
oh right, okay.
Yeah, she talks about him as being just seeing him around, like you know, he did
cool, just like a cool looking like kid, but quite a jolly kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
like pretty sociable.
Yeah. And was music always a big part of your life? Obviously, you've got Sifters around the corner, which was made famous
by the Boys. Being a kid. Yeah, I've been into music from I think the thing that turned me head was Fly High by George Formby. It's quite anthemic. Super opera in the sky. But you know, no, I've always loved music.
Yeah.
And sort of been I don't know, from like sort of early teens.
Yeah. Really. And was obviously we had the Manchester scene was a big thing, although it was a little bit later, I suppose. What was it like? Yeah. So mainly, what was your teenagers? You know, what posters on your wall when you were a teenager? Who you were thinking about?
I was a big Dexys fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I absolutely love, like, the first album. And kind of my first introduction, really, to music was I've got an uncle who was into punk. So it's, like, magical. You know, I remember, like, listening to Nevermind the Bollocks with headphones on and stuff, and my mum like saying, I think it may have been can't remember the tune, what the tune was called. It's the one with Ronnie Biggs.
Oh yeah, you know? Yeah. Fucking.
Mum saying it's like devil music, don't let him listen to that. That kind of thing. So things stick with you. I remember listening to like the Sham, he had like a Sham 69 album.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre how, like, you know, words and stuff stick in your head. I'm talking about, you know, I was pretty young and for years I can remember it. And he actually like sent us like a copy of it. It was awful. It's like so bad. You know? Anyway.
And I see you got the magazine t-shirt on today. I've always heard, you know, massive magazine fan.
Yeah. Like Genius Band.
Yeah.
And it's one of those bands that just get under your skin. Initially you just think, what the fuck's this?
Yeah.
And you fall in love with it. But I just thought, you know, John McGeoch, like, just incredible. Genius. I like a lot of like that stuff where it's quite angular. I'm a big XTC fan as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know, great band.
They were an amazing band. Wire, yeah. You know, a lot of bands. I just thought they were bands from around that time were like pretty unique.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was a lot going on, wasn't it? Coming out of punk, all the different kind of ideas and the different.
It's amazing Killing Joke. You know, it's like, geez.
Yeah.
I've kind of listen to a lot of older stuff.
Yeah. And when did you first sort of pick up a guitar or get into music in that way, like creating music?
I always squawked from a kid. You know, I remember having a paper round and, you know, one of them, like, can reading smash hits and singing. So the bulk of my life, really. So, like, when I was at high school, you know, I was in a band and stuff. So it's always been with me. I mean, I play a bit of guitar now, do you know what I mean? But purely to, like, sort of write, and that's a fun thing. It's just a nice bit of escapism, really.
Enough to get my ideas
across.
Yeah. That was similar to Rick Witter from Shed 7, actually. He's a similar thing. He can just about, you know, enough to write. But, and then obviously picks up with the other guys.
Yeah. That's it. You know, you've got, like, sort of melody, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I do, like, put stuff down, but I do quite like fucking it up a bit as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just being a bit, like, spontaneous.
Yeah.
Like, happy accidents, not, you know, I think you take any character out of it if you sort of take yourself too seriously.
You know what? I was doing but you know, part of the reason I've sort of been thinking about the, all this whole early years of the 80s and the pre-Oasis stuff, actually,
yeah,
was when we were talking about Noel's demos. I pinged you over the link to it earlier. That stuff from like 89 sort of era. And one of the things that I was talking to my mate about is that when you're doing those sort of four-tracky recordings like that, that it's great because you make mistakes, you know, and sometimes you go, oh, I'll keep that, you know what I mean? Whereas if these days, if everything's programmed onto GarageBand or onto different programmed drums, whatever, you don't tend to make mistakes.
No, you know what I mean? No, and it sort of takes the character away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know, there's no rules, is there? And I just think we like studios and stuff. It's... And producers, even like sort of back when it's kind of half a dozen of one and six of the other for me, because you can get stuff down and you can get it sounding all right.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just like working on like Logic or whatnot, but obviously you're not going to capture the vibe like sort of like playing in a room, are you?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So it's stating the obvious.
So when does the main thing, obviously you were you had this band, this group called Fantasy Chicken and the Amateurs, yourself so was that your sort of your first sort of thing that you did as a music side yourself, or
I'd done stuff like before, kind of before then, do you know what I mean? I mean, I'd say like we had like a mutual friend. So we'd just get stoned and, like, you know, it's like eat lots of fucking chocolate. And Noel would come around quite a lot, like, sort of, you know, just with his guitar and stuff. So, so we just got in a room, really, which was, you know, not like loads and loads of times or whatnot, but I'd see him, you know, like, quite a bit, really. But it was nice, but it's funny because I actually thought about it before. I think that getting into a room, you know, where it's almost like a little bit, a room as in, you know, rehearsal room. Being a little bit overwhelming. And I knew, you know, when you've got like, what, five different personalities and not much of a clue. But, you know, nice, you know, because you, again, it's just, and I just remember a couple of like mates of mine, it's probably like quite entertaining for them.
Yeah.
You know, just losing a laugh thinking, what's this idiot?
Well, I was going to say, listening back to your interview you did with the Spanish guys, which was really cool. Actually, they're good lads. I couldn't quite get my head around it. So was it like, so was it just sort of you and Noel and this other mate, like, or did you end up with a full band, like with drums and stuff?
So basically the guy who was playing the bass was the guy who was originally like the bass player with Molly Arfad, is like one of my best mates, drummer from my school, guitarist. I think we met from an ad. And I think he was quite like clued up. I wouldn't have really known anything about like sort of indie bands or anything. I remember him. So he must have been like an NME reader.
Yeah.
I remember him was like going on about the Bodines and stuff and it just going over my head. Do you know what I mean? And I think I remember this, some daft Jim Cole painted faces. Yeah, it's like quite poppy, really. And my memory, like sort of the standout memory for that. So Noel had just come in and just kind of join in with whatever it was. But I do remember him doing like this little guitar riff, which did, it was like, I would say like rockabilly, but you know, da-dong, 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 da-dong. And I think the only thing that's sort of come to me, naturally come to me, was just to meow down the microphone. I don't think it got off to the best of starts. But no, you know, he's like he's like a sorted, like, lad. Yeah. And it's good, you know, it's just a bunch of, like, lads, isn't it? That not really knowing what they're doing and kind of wondering. But the other thing is, his auntie worked where I worked, so I'd always ask after him, because I always wanted to do some music with him. Yeah. Which would have been the time when he would have been away with the Inspirals.
So what you just
like,
was it...
and other things I remember being which was somewhere like completely different, because that was in Charlton. It was like in Charlton. I think in that room, like the Roses rehearsed there, and Simply Red and stuff. So I think it had quite a bit of a history.
Okay,
but I've got like a memory of doing singing Ever Changing Moods with him in Stockport. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, in Stockport, yeah, in like these again them real stuff that they call like the greenhouse or something.
Yeah.
I think it's there now.
Oh,
it's
fantastic.
Quite like sort of random.
So was it more just sort of you'd get up, get around together and jam together and sort of, you know, rather than him coming with a song or someone else coming with a song?
Yeah, nothing. Or, you know, you just kind of, I just always enjoyed singing. So like if you come out with me, mates, you'd just be stoned. You'd just start singing something. He'd be playing his guitar. I think it's a little bit more structured with a Fantasy Chicken thing. And we got in a room, you know, probably a good few times. Can't quite remember, but it stating the obvious, it went kind of like nowhere. I do think my friend, I've not seen him for years, apparently he would have like had a tape recorder running, so when he come, I remember bumping into him once and him saying he had like sort of a tape, you know, just going through his tapes. And
mate, if you've got a tape of that would be probably,
yeah,
definitely worth digging out.
I've not spoke to the guy for a good few years, but I do remember thinking, right, okay. This is days of like when you just listen to cassette. Anyway, just
even if it's just stupid, you know, even if it's just jamming or whatever, that would be the earliest ever tape of Noel playing. So that would be worth
a few quid with it, because he's not daft, you know what I mean?
Well, it's not out there. As I say, the first thing that we've got that's out there is that demo I pinged over to you, which is...
Yeah, and that would have been like prior to that, you know, most definitely.
Yeah. Well, I think this is sort of the first thing that we're aware of anyway that he's ever done musically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the name, Fantasy Chicken and the Amateurs, who came up with that?
It's just a chicken shop called Fantasy Chicken. you know, it kind of fell from the sky. Yeah, just on the way to the rehearsal room. I think after we crossed Princess Parkway, this place is on the left. So we had a name by the time we got to the room. But it was good. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And same with Liam.
Yeah. And what are we talking? Are we talking like 86, 87 around this time?
Yeah.
Fair enough. The Smiths a big influence around that time, I would have thought. Was that sort of something?
Yeah, I remember him loving the Smiths.
Yeah.
And the night, it always sticks in my mind. I don't know what it's like, pretty random this, but I remember He must have been having a bit of a jam or something, being round at his house. It was the night when Tyson won his title, you know, the first one.
All right.
20 years old, Mike Tyson, on his way to becoming one of the youngest heavyweight champions of all time. Bangs the body. Wow, with that uppercut is Tyson. Catches him with a light left foot, and he goes down. He goes down. He should be able to get up from this. His legs may be shut. They are. As Trevor Burdick falls back in the rope, I don't know if he's going to be able to continue. He's got the heart, but his body won't let him do what his mind wants to. And he's counted out. It'll be scored as a knockout. Mills Lane counted him out to 10. It's all over. We've got a brand new heavyweight champion of the world, Mike Tyson.
But yeah, no, he was into his music. But I remember him, you know, having like a bit of a... And he was a tad. I think everyone was a tad, like, sort of in Burnet. Well, a lot of people were tads in Burnet, you know, when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we got to see Grease, and it's the first time I've ever seen, like, people dancing in the cinema. It's, like, bizarre, really. Yeah, no, it's like that. Because I don't know whether I'd had... Because I had Noel a fight when we were kids, and just before the fight, he did like a little teddy boy dance.
So tell us about the fight, sorry.
Yeah, no, it was silly. There was a guy, there's a guy called Jimmy Doughty, he's a bit older than us. He's just like a shit stirrer. I do, and anyway, I think Noel had fallen out with my mate and me, being muscular. sort of stepped in, and I trained for the fight on an inflatable Hulk punch bag, which, you know, must have had like it was fucking leaking. So yeah, no, it was bizarre because it was just when I was saying it's an area where there was a lot of lads,
yeah,
you know, it's just like a big crowd of guys, and
yeah.
You know, my corner said smack him in the nose when I'm not when he's not looking, which I did. I'm not too sure what his advisor said to me. But it's one of them, and then, you know, your mum comes out and says your tea's ready, and you, it's so all you over. And then there was a five-a-side glue-sniffing match straight after it, so there's, like, guys just rolling around on the floor after it.
So it was the fight was the starter, and then the five-a-side glue sniffing was the main event.
Yeah, it was like that. No, I think the main event was the fight. Do you know what I mean? It just people have been like sort of stirring it. But yeah. That was those days, wasn't it? You know, when you're a kid, you know, everybody's sort of out and about on the streets.
Yeah, but there's a lot more fighting back then. I think there's hardly any. You know, you very rarely get fighting these days. I just know I'm a bit younger than you, obviously, but in the even in the 80s, there was still fight. You know, there was always fights at school all awful, the time.
You know, it's awful, and especially with like sort of kids, because it's, you know, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
But I think things that stick in my mind was the whole, probably more the glue sniffing.
So how did it sort of end? Was there an official end to the band, or was it just that, you know, you kind of drifted away?
Because it never really, I just think we, you know, obviously it's like a group of people that like music and stuff, and I don't know, you just, like I say, it was all a little bit overwhelming getting into like sort of a room, and then, you know, if you get a taste to getting into a room, I know for me, every now and then I'd kind of think of, even from a young age, you know, I want to do music, I want to be in a band. I'm going to Marple with these goths. No, it's just random, you know, when you go in and you don't know, like, sort of, what's happening, really.
Yeah.
To be fair, but you kind of, I don't know, put yourself out there.
Yeah. No, fair enough. It's always a bold choice, a bold step to say, yeah, I want to do music, or, you know,
yeah, because it's escapism, you know, it's kind of like sort of one of them, you know, it's a big jam fan, you know, it, like when I was younger, and it, you know, painted a picture, didn't it?
So where do we go there from Fancy Chicken sort of fading away, and then you sort of come into Molly Halfhead. Obviously, you had the same, a couple of the same musicians.
Yeah. So with me friend again, that was just that thing where I thought I'd been in Jersey, come back, and then just thought, you know, what, I've got to do something, and it's just an ad. It's just an ad in lieu. So they had like a trombone player,
yeah,
like doing all the bass parts, you know, before I joined. And to be fair, it was like just the first time I'd actually like was in the company of people where I felt comfortable. And you could just come up with some, you know, you'd be encouraged.
Cool.
And it was a bit of an Ovi story, you know, we 5 days a week. Walking from where I lived to Chelton, which was a bit of a trek, and just, but for the love of it,
yeah.
And you kind of, you know, you get a blueprint, don't you, of summer, and you think, right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great times. That was really good.
Yeah. And how did you go to actually getting signed and getting publishing and getting the first album out?
With us, there was a massive buzz about the band, massive buzz. And I think as well, after like the Manchester thing, on the whole, no one would have gone near a Manchester band. They just wouldn't. Do you know what I mean? So it was really Craig Cash who got the ball rolling for us, because he was, Gary Cash out of the Royal Family.
Yeah, and Bonehead's cousin.
Is he Bonehead's cousin, Gary Cash?
Yeah.
No, I don't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, he had a band that rehearsed, we rehearsed. You end up falling asleep. he knew Gary Cash. We'd done a demo that had captured summer, and he loved it, and he was just playing it all the time, and then it just snowballed. So we got management quite early on, and because we were like that well drilled, and there was an energy, you know what I mean? I think with some of those songs, there was a bit of an edge.
Yeah,
you know, and certainly, you know, it would have been quite hard hitting, sort of like early on, I think. So I think it's the first year of In the City, you know, the music.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah.
So there was something that run alongside that, because certain people thought it was boxed off. Anyway, we did that, and when we come to play, it had built up that much. I'm not exaggerating. There's about 150 A&R men there.
Bloody hell.
So to an extent, you know, we could have gone a number of like ways. What I will say about that, though, is we was pretty naive, as you would be, you know. So I don't think it was, we should have just really signed to someone who got totally what we was doing. I mean, I remember guy Roddy McKenna, who was from Silvertone, who's clued up. Do you know what I mean? He'd mentioned like John Leckie and whoever and you know, magazine. So he'd be saying the right things, and that's what we should have done.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who is like a music fan.
Yeah.
Because that's the great thing about Oasis, isn't it? With
creation.
With Alan McGee, most legends wouldn't have gone do it again.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
That's it. Because most people don't know their ass from their elbow. You know, it's that simple. They're not like music fans, and, you know, the naked. That is passing the book. So
yeah,
work with someone who fucking loves music and
who can
encourage you and, you know, be really positive. It's like,
yeah. So as you were, so obviously Noel had gone off with the Inspirals doing his touring and stuff, and then you sort of obviously did well and you had your deals and got the album out and things. Were you still in touch with Noel at this time? Because Stockholm Monsters had come out of Burnage as well, hadn't they?
Stockholm Monsters live next door but one to me.
No way, I didn't know that.
Yeah, two doors away. I love it because there was a guy, youngest, so Colin Francis, Jimmy France, it was Ace. So he's my age, and he come to our primary school. And the first day, he's like a hero. Well, to me, he was a hero. Went to school in a white vest, leather pants. I remember him having a drink of Coke mixed with milk, and he had a fight with the cock of the school all in one day. First day, how ace is that? But you know, they've just been blasting like sort of music and out and everything, you know. So especially when you think that, when I said earlier, there was quite a lot of like sort of Teds around, you know. Obviously like sort of into punk, really, you know, those guys.
It's just what's real. What I give her to understand is exactly what I steal. I went my way into the heart of the crowd. Went my way into the heart of the crowd. I was shocked to find what was allowed. I didn't lose my soul in the crowd.
That's cool. So Stockholm Monsters had come before, and then you guys were sort of the next Burnage band to make it. Coming out of there. And then were you still in touch with Noel over that period, or once he'd gone off?
Yeah, I bump into him every now and then. So I remember bumping into him. I think where he would have lived in town, and him saying, you know, we should do some gigs together. We actually did do a gig together.
Yeah.
The Boardwalk, but I was ill, so we did our gig. And I got off.
Right.
And then, funnily enough, when we were recording, it would have been our second album, we did some of it at Eden.
Yeah.
Studio, where, you know, Oasis, I think they'd recorded there. I just remember getting there, and the woman showed, because they had flats over the road from the studio, saying if the phone goes, this is... They'd have probably had a couple of singles out
right at
that point, saying if the phone goes, for a guy called Noel, because he was living in the flat. So he was actually staying above where we were. You know, we were staying there whilst we were recording. So I bumped into him then. And then later on with our publishing with the Wireless thing was with Creation.
Yeah.
So I'd see him a few times. It's always sorted, always, you know.
It's just funny, isn't it, that the two of you are kind of, you know, just kids. I know you were like 19 or 18 or whatever, but then the fact that it's just a funny situation, I suppose. I've sort of been imagining, if it was me, like, you've got your sort of thing that you go off and you get signed and you're off doing it. He goes off and does his roadie stuff with the Inspirals, and then he's you see what I mean? It's sort of a parallel the way you've both gone.
Thing, and I mean, the other side of it as well is you'd had Debbie on. You did something with Debbie, didn't you?
Yeah, my sister loves Debbie. Yeah.
So Debbie's my son's mum. So I was with Debbie for like, you know, quite a few years. So it's kind of weird, her story as well, you know.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. But I do remember listening when I was saying over being at Eden.
Yeah.
And Noel being above. So you got your day in like playing his guitar and getting up to like whatever. And I remember being given a copy of Definitely Maybe, you know, on the day, like, and being blown away, you know. It's like,
yeah. What did you think at the time? Could you have foreseen from when you'd known him that like he had that in him?
No, I couldn't, but I remember when I saw him on The Word, and you just know, you know, as a real, most things on The Word, it sounds shit. do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they go on, they do that, and there's a vibe. So I get a vibe. It's like, you know, it's not easy, is it?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a bit of a like fairy tale, I think, really. You know, everything. Yeah. It's like everything sort of fell into place and was meant to be.
Give it up for Oasis, making their TV debut with Supersonic.
I certainly think around like that time, you know, obviously it was music would have been dictated by the comics,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the anime and whatnot, and everyone would be trying to get the same
sound, yeah,
kind of like thing. There'd only be a couple of like sort of TV things,
yeah,
would get, but you know, I just think what they had to do, they did really, really,
yeah.
Did it, didn't they? You know,
yeah, like... they nailed it. And what about? I was going to ask you actually, because obviously you got the connection with Debbie. There's the whole like getting signed by McGee story. Like, so you know, then there's been rumors over the years that it was all kind of a concocted story that McGee, he knew Debbie, he would have. What do you reckon?
I think at the end of the day, it's obviously sometimes it's like time and place. So he'd gone to freak Debbie out. Do you know what I mean? And that's it. And obviously she'd encouraged them to like sort of do the gig. And he didn't, and that's it. You know, he saw him and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I'll sign you.
So anything other than that is like, is nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just that the fact that he'd, I think he had physically sat at Tony's drum kit before, like he'd gone to see Debbie and then they just gone into the rehearsal rooms and, you know, they had the Union Jack on the wall and he goes, you know, so I think he definitely spoke to, you know, he was aware of them, but obviously hadn't heard them basically.
No, well, even if you think about, sorry, I'm just getting a sick. No worries, even if you think with stuff like, it's a small world, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, because Alan lived in Manchester, didn't he? And
mm-hmm.
stuff. So you're bound to know someone who knows someone, but in terms of a band, you know, and it happening and someone going, it's that's it, because the mad thing was, and again, I think things are meant to be, because I know that people, when we played the Boardwalk, were there to see us.
Yeah.
You kind of think, well, you know, why didn't anybody else?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Because it wouldn't have been that long after. It's a funny thing, isn't it?
Mm. It is bizarre. And then I was going to ask you about like Molly Harfett, because I think Molly Harfett are fantastic. But it's just one of those. Obviously, you had the minor hit with Shine, and you did the you know, the Gary Crowley show, and you did the Radio 1 sessions and things like that.
Yeah.
But you never, it's because you were, I think the timing for me, because obviously you've got a lot of bands that just didn't get that. A lot of bands got that big kind of bump under the Britpop banner, and you guys didn't really. You were kind of a little bit early with the first album. And you see what I mean? I sort of think, well, Christ, that's, you know, this is so much better than a lot of the bands in Britpop. And yet when people talk about Britpop, they don't tend to talk about you guys. I think because you were a little bit early, you know what I mean?
And I think the other thing is, well, we weren't a fashionable band, do you know what I mean? And some of the stuff, like lyrically, I could have been singing in German. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of one of them, really. So it would have made like sort of sense to us, And we'd have gone in and done. I mean, all that stuff, first album, some great like sort of songs, and then it's quite funny, isn't it? You do something like, you know, we did like sort of the second album, and in your mind, you're doing something that's a bit poppy, poppier, and it ain't. I listen, yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? You know, when it just is you that caught up in something. You can shine. Got your guides. Give them time. You can shine. Simmons to paint the gates. Reeds, beware, do not blunder my windy house. Crack them on all the same.
Say even that there's you've got your poppy moments, and I think your voice as well has got sort of a John Lennon quality to it, especially in some of the phrasing. Yeah, so for me, it's like when I've talked to people, I say, imagine like an angular kind of Manchester band with a bit discordant and different ideas, but then you've got kind of John Lennon on the top of it, and also these sort of spoken word parts, and you know, it's a really interesting mix, you know. But
great. Like I say, because we were, as a group of people, you know, we're really into it.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a only fools and horses, isn't it? Mm. Do you know what
this time next year,
it'll get better. Lot of knee. So yeah, but it's good, you know. And I just think in comparison to, you know, maybe other bands who were around it. Like the time, we were fortunate that we got to do two albums.
Yeah.
To be fair, do you know what I mean? So, it's funny. But yeah. I've got, you know, there's moments for me. And I think, again, there's nothing like hindsight, is there? Because if you listen back to some, I think, because I'm quite musical, is some things would become apparent in it where you do it a little bit different. You know, in terms of like sort of arrangements and shit like that.
Anyway. I was just going to say, I really like the band Wireless. And if people aren't aware of Wireless, this is your band after Molly Halfhead.
Yeah.
Because this is so big and bold, and you know, reminds me, there's an Oxford band, I'm from Oxford, and there's an Oxford band called the Candy Skins that had that sort of sound.
Oh, right. Okay. Big,
you know, strings loud chiming guitars.
Really good, like, pop songs, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, what was the thinking there? Was it just sort of... And once again, I think the timing's off again. I think if that had been the 95 album, then that's massive, whereas that comes in 98, and it's like Britpop, that sort of sound would have been perfect in 95. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I like the idea of just a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, maybe to write, like, tunes that... I mean, like, sort of sound like it was contrived or whatnot, but trying to write things that would maybe cross over a little bit more. But I just think the sound of my voice, it would never really do that anyway. Right. I don't think, you know, personally. But I think we're unlucky, you know, like you say, because we got quite a few of those singles got like B-listed, you know, on Radio 1 and loads of radio play, but it means jack shit if you're not getting the press. If it takes two to play silly games, I'm one. We are saved. Fill out with the familiar. We are right. We are saved. Fill out with the think some of that stuff would have been recorded in a more organic way.
Yeah.
You know, had a little bit more bite.
Okay. I love that sort of sound. Wanna Dies, Candy Skins, Calvin on Butler, you know.
The guy we did it with, you know, he just looked like a chemist who had to go for his tea at about fucking 5 o'clock every night. You know what chance have you got, really? Because you want people, you want to be working with people, you know, in terms of producers who add to it, who are like, you know, not just an engineer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, creative.
Yeah.
But I just hate
just to finish off, do you have a particular favourite Oasis song?
I'd say Slide Away.
Yeah,
I'd say Slide Away.
Nice one. Yeah. All right, mate. Great to speak to you.
Nice one, man, anyway.
Speak to you soon.
All right, all the best. See you later.
All the best, Paul. Brilliant.
Right, so I hope you guys really enjoyed that. Absolute pleasure to speak to Paul. And yeah, I'm sure when I interviewed Debbie from Sister Lovers that she'd said that her and Paul used to be an item and had a kid. But yeah, to be honest, I completely forgot about it. So when he said that, I thought, oh yeah, actually, that's a really good point. But yeah, that was, it's pretty mad, isn't it, that he lived two doors down from Stockholm Monsters, lived a street away from the Gallaghers, ended up together with Debbie, who used to rehearse with Oasis and was mates with Alan McGee. It's all bizarrely interconnected in that world. So anyway, thanks very much for listening. Most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly appreciated. Just to let you know, a Patreon exclusive episode went up a few days ago, which was basically, I asked on Twitter for people's unpopular Oasis opinions, and I got hundreds of them. And so rather than reply to them, I just thought, well, I'm just going to hit record and start rambling. And I recorded basically me responding to a lot of these unpopular Oasis opinions, and that's gone up on the Patreon feed. That's not edited like a proper podcast with all clips and stuff. It's just me quite tired, to be honest, just sort of answering those. So if you would find that interesting, it goes on for about an hour and a half, then obviously head over to Patreon and check it out. You can always email me, oasispod@gmail.com. You can follow on social media, Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, and Oasis Pod on Instagram. just also to let you know, I've put out another podcast on the Britpop History channel. So that's what was 1001 album. So I've called that Oasis Podcast B-Sides. So then that's going to be a bit of a catch-all term for anything else that I want to do. But at the moment, the next sort of season, as I'm calling it, is Britpop History. So we're going to keep going with that. The latest episode is June 1992, which talks about Pulp and the Manic Street Preachers and The Verve, so it's an interesting one. And then next up is going to be July, and we're going to be talking about Oxford primarily, because that was the month when the Jennifers had their first song, which is who came on to be Supergrass. But anyway, that will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening, and as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.